Hello, it's Mike Robin. Welcome to The Point, where all parts of pop culture come together. The Great Gatsby is in theaters, and Leonardo DiCaprio is here to talk about why Gatsby is important to you and to him. Plus, The Office finale is on the way. We talked to Greg Daniels and John Krasinski about what it's like pulling the curtain down for one last time. At 24 on the way back, let's get to The Point.
This is The Point, The Point Radio, get The Point Radio.
The lavish reboot of The Great Gatsby is headed into theaters, starring Leonardo DiCaprio, Tobey Maguire, Carey Mulligan, and more. I sat down with Leo to talk about his take on Gatsby's hunger for more in life, and is that something that he shares?
I think everyone has some sort of connection to Gatsby as a character. He's a character that has created himself according to his own imagination and dreams, and lifted himself from his own bootstraps as a poor youth in the Midwest, and created this image that is the Great Gatsby, and it's a truly American story in that regard. You know, here is this emerging democracy that is America in the 1920s, and he wants to emulate a Rockefeller of that time period, and of course creates his wealth in the underworld. But this is the new land that is America, and it was a very exciting time. And I think we can all relate to that dreamer in Gatsby. Each one of us gets excited by the prospect of somebody that has ambition, somebody that has that much ambition.
Gatsby is a character that is a master at reinventing himself, and Leo feels that this part of the character makes him that much more intriguing.
The Gatsby that I remember reading when I was 15 years old in junior high school was far different than the Gatsby that I read as an adult. And what I remember from my years in junior high was, this hopeless romantic that was, solely in love with this one woman and created this great amount of wealth to be able to respectably hold her hand. But then to reread it as an adult, it was incredibly fascinating. I mean, it is one of those novels that is talked about almost nearly 100 years later for a reason. It's incredibly nuanced, it's existential, and here at the center of this movie is this man that is incredibly hollow. He's searching for some sort of meaning in his life, and he's attached himself to this relic known as Daisy. She's a mirage, and I was struck by the sadness in him for the first time, and I looked at him completely different. I looked at him as somebody that was very hollow and searching for some sort of meaning. And Nick is the only one that truly sees what's going on in reality. And here's this man that's desperately holding on to this image. And one very telling sequence that we talked about a lot, and for me was a very important one in the book, was, after this great caravansary that he's created, known as Gatsby's Castle, in order to lure Daisy in, Nick notices that he's holding her, yet he's still staring out at the green light. You know, he's finally got her in his arms, but he's still searching for this thing that he thinks is going to complete him. And that was the Gatsby that I was incredibly excited about playing as an actor. So as I got older, it took on new meaning. And I think that's what's so incredible about this novel. Everyone who reads it has their own interpretation of who these people are, who these characters are. And that's what's very difficult about making... I don't know if this answers your question, but that's what's very difficult about making a movie about it, is because everyone has their own sort of personal attachment to this book, and they feel like they know these characters on a very intimate level. And of course, when you're making a movie, you have to be much more specific.
For co-star Tobey Maguire, how did his relationship with Leo play out in this role?
Yeah, I think... Leo and I have a very kind of trusting and close friendship. So I think that just the kind of comfortable, open dialogue that we had in terms of the working process contributed to what we did. And then in regards to like the actual, like texture or chemistry of the relationship, it's harder for me to judge like what you know, what contributed to that, but I'm sure that that had an effect there. I think that the Nick and Gatsby relationship is such an interesting relationship to explore, you know, because from my point of view, obviously I'm looking through the eyes of Nick and searching through the book as Nick, and Nick in relationship to Gatsby in particular, and then the way that we made the movie and the way the book sort of is written, he's looking back over his experiences. So there's both the experiences, you know, in real time as he lived them, and then his relation to Nick's relationship to them later. So looking back through who Gatsby was to him personally and as an idea, I think inspires Nick to go off into his own future. And then specifically, you know, I think having an understanding that Gatsby had an agenda for Nick, but ultimately unfolded into a real friendship, and perhaps Gatsby's only friendship, I think was very meaningful to Nick. And, you know, I definitely have an affection for Leo, so it's easy for me to have affection for Gatsby as Nick as well.
Meanwhile, Leo tells me he's still in awe of the material.
You know, this is like American Shakespeare. This is one of the most celebrated novels of all time. So to venture into a project of this magnitude, it really took a sort of core unit of trust for me, you know, to feel comfortable and to know that, you know, somebody that I've known for 20 years and Baz Luhrmann was involved, and Toby was immediately involved in that process from the onset, was incredibly comforting. We're always extremely honest with each other, and to me, you know, I don't know if this project would have happened unless we had that sort of relationship, because it needed that. We needed those checks and balances, and we needed to have a, you know, a contract with each other to continually be honest with one another.
The Great Gatsby in 3D and 2D as well, and in theaters right now. Into the very latest in pop culture. It seemed like just minutes after Fox pulled the plug on Kiefer Sutherland's series Touch that there were talks out there about the return of 24, and now it seems to have been confirmed that Fox is considering bringing the series back for what they call a limited series run sometime next year. It's way in the early stages, so not much is known other than Kiefer is talking about returning, as is former 24 showrunner Howard Gordon. Little bad news for the pilot of the Omni series Sixth Gun. NBC has passed on that pilot. However, sources are saying that Universal is still very positive behind the project, and it certainly isn't dead yet, with them shopping it around to some other networks or outlets sometime over the next couple of months. Top Cat is back. The popular Hanna-Barbera 60s television show has been acquired by Viva Pictures and will release Top Cat the movie based on that series. It shows up in some theaters and more than likely on DV and video on demand sometime before the end of this year. Fans of Eureka should be thrilled to know that Colin Ferguson has found a new job. He'll turn up still on Sci-Fi on the network's series Haven. It'll be a season-long arc on the show. He'll be playing a, quote, mysterious stranger who comes to town and wreaks some havoc. It is not connected to his character on Eureka, by the way. Production on the fourth season of Haven is starting now, and it will debut on the network more than likely late this year or early in 2014. Warner Brothers has snatched up the rights to do a feature film based on Dungeons & Dragons, specifically the chainmail version of the game. It'll be written by David Leslie Johnson, who wrote Wrath of the Titans and a couple of episodes of The Walking Dead 2 as well. This could be the boost the game needs. Lately, sales have been down, especially when you compare it to where they used to be. However, over the years, over $1 billion of D&D products have been sold. It's tough for TV networks to be the first to do anything these days, but A&E networks have managed to find something that's not been done already when they'll simulcast the original miniseries Bonnie and Clyde on three networks. It'll be on A&E, Lifetime, and History all at the same time, and will premiere on the networks later this year. BBC America is getting into the zombie game with their new feature called In the Flesh, featuring a huge cast that also includes Bill Macy, by the way, from Shameless. It begins on BBC America on June the 6th and runs for three nights. We've told you how Jupiter's Legacy from Mark Millar and Image did pretty well for the month of April in comic stores. Here's the official number. Well over 105,000 copies sold in stores in April. The only other Image comic to reach those numbers in recent years, of course, has been The Walking Dead.
The point.
Graphic novel sales in comic stores grew again, this time just under 15% during the month of April. But the big surprise, of course, is an unusual placement of Image with a number of titles in the top 10 already. Let's run that down. Here is your top 10 best-selling graphic novels in comic stores in April, starting at number 10 with Hawkeye, the trade paperback. Volume 1, My Life is a Weapon Now. At number 9, DC's A Swamp Thing, a trade paperback, Family Tree. At number 8, DC with a Killing Joke Special Edition hardcover. And at number 7, the Batman Detective Comics Hardcover Collection, second volume in that, again from DC. At number 6, the Batman Detective Comics Collection, this time in the trade paperback form, Faces of Death. Number 5, Punk Rock Jesus from DC. At number 4, Saga from Image. Saga, the first volume, by the way. At number 3, the Happy Trade paperback from Image. At number 2, Manhattan Projects from Image, the second volume there. And in comic stores, the number 1 best-selling graphic novel in April, Walking Dead, the trade paperback. Volume 1, Days Gone By, again from Image.
The Point Radio.
After a decade-long rise to comedy dominance, The Office is finally packing it in with their supersized finale on NBC. But they've not been going out quietly for the last season. Some of the twists and turns have included a bump in the road for longtime characters Jim and Pam. And I asked actor John Krasinski to comment on that.
My favorite thing about the show has always been how, especially with the Jim and Pam story, how real the writers have always been to a relationship. And that, yes, there are incredibly blissful times, like you were saying, but there's also times where, you know, the world around them can stall out and feel like it's not enough or that it is enough or feel bland or more exciting from time to time. And so, you know, my whole pitch to Greg was that, you know, we've done so much with Jim and Pam, and now, you know, after marriage and kids, there was a bit of a lull there, I think, for them about what they wanted to do. And the idea of Jim's ambition was always one of my favorite things from the early seasons, that it seemed like between, you know, Australia and trying to be the boss at corporate and NYC, you know, I think that all those things for me were really exciting, that Jim always felt like there was something that he could be doing more of. And so I wanted to explore that, and the idea of him going to another city came from my brother, actually, in his work at the beginning of his job. He was traveling a lot all over the country for all his different clients, and you know, it was definitely a strain on the family in a very new way. Obviously not a strain that was as dramatic as what we did on the show, but it was a thing where sort of seemingly simple things like basic spending time with your children and in the same city was becoming more and more difficult and putting a strain on, you know, just harder to do and mentally. And so for me it was, Can you have this perfect relationship go through a split and keep it the same, which of course you can't. And I just thought, I said to Greg, it would be really interesting to see how that split will affect two people that you know so well. I think the exciting thing was to know that the audience would sort of take a guess at what Jim would do and what Pam would do. And so to run those numbers on this relationship was really, really interesting to me.
Showrunner Greg Daniels told me why this whole thing works.
Yeah, and I was just very attracted to the idea of doing something that would matter and that where people would feel very involved. And I think that there are a number of moments this year where, you know, you really become involved in what's happening. And in order to get that feeling of involvement there, you know, you need some ups and downs.
As things wrap up, I had a chance to ask John what he'll miss most about the series.
There's so much to miss. I mean, for me, and I think probably more than the other cast members, I mean, I was a waiter before this show. So what I miss most about this character is way too complexly entwined in my real life. So to me, this was a winning lottery ticket, except with a winning lottery ticket, you just get money. And with this, you get a whole change of your life. And everything about my life has changed and become better, and I feel so lucky to be where I am. So it's hard to separate the two because I'm so sort of meshed in the experience. But for sure, you know, I will say, and I don't know if this is a good answer or a bad answer, but I will say I think the thing I'll miss most is playing a character that people believe in so much and attach themselves to in various degrees. There are some people who think they are a gym. There are some people who are looking for a gym. And you know, I think to me, and I know to Jenna, playing the gym-Pam relationship and realizing how important it became to so many people was such an incredible honor that I think that there was a small part of my brain that really didn't want to let anyone down every single week. And that was actually really exciting. I felt like I was given a tremendous responsibility, and that responsibility I really will miss, because it's just so much fun to play a character that people are watching and rooting for and loving. So I really appreciate that.
Fans of the show know that John is a master of the camera take, knowing exactly when to take that look at the audience to share the joke with them. And that's something, though, that he doesn't plan on taking with him after the series ends.
I wish I could say I was professional enough to never look at a camera again on another job, but that's already been blown several times. And bizarrely, on movie sets, they don't really dig it when you look into the camera. Which is a bizarre fact. I will miss it very much. I think that going back to the other question, I think one of the best things about Jim is that, you know, he's one of those characters, and there are a few others in different television shows or I guess movies too, but you know, I remember talking to Greg in the first week about how he saw Jim as the window for the audience into this office, that everyone could watch this office, but they needed someone to tell them that it was okay to laugh at everything and to see everything as a little bit ridiculous. And to me, that was so much fun to play. And I remember the first time reading the script that I had to look in the camera. I you know, that's very stressful because you don't want to blow it and overdo it. You know, I always joke that there's a number. You know, my favorite thing was our DP, Matt Stone, was like, so on this scene, when you look to Jenna, give me the number 4. And I always loved thinking that I had somehow got it down to a catalog of different looks. So I will miss it very, very much, and hopefully can leave it on the office set and not blow any other professional opportunity by looking down the lens.
Final episode of The Office is supersized, and it runs next Thursday on NBC. And, of course, see more at NBC.com.
The Point.
That does it for the podcast. We're back in a couple of days. You know, with so many shows on TV ending in May, it's nice to see something fresh around the corner. And one of those fresh things coming up soon on NBC is a series involving actress Anne Heche. She's here to talk about that in a couple of days. In the meantime, keep following pop culture 24/7 on The Point Radio, where you can listen free on your laptop or your desktop. Again, thepointradio.com. On your mobile device, your iPhone or your iPad, with a free app in the App Store under Pop Culture and The Point. Or on your Droid or your BlackBerry with TuneIn Radio, another free app. We're on Facebook and Twitter under The Point Radio. And this podcast turns up on sites like ComicMix.com and MichaelDavisWorld.com and in the iTunes podcast directory. We'll see you back here in a few days.
Get The Point Radio.